Uno Brookners. So here's the first three notes. Can you do that? Brought to a great stop. How about the next notes? Sense to me. So that's Greek for Lord have mercy, for those of you who know it, and you might know it specifically from either the Orthodox or the traditional Catholic Mass. So all I'm going to ask you to do is tuck that little tune into your memory right now so that when it reappears later on this evening, you'll hopefully be able to recognize it and just greet it like an old friend, okay? So how does a program like what we're playing for you tonight come to be? We've got Ravel, we've got Bruckner together. That's Mr. Sensuality and Mr. Spirituality. Odd bedfellows. I also like to ask the question, just like on Jeopardy, what are the questions to which this program provides an answer, okay? We are the answer now. What are the questions? So here's some of the ones that I was grappling with in order to make this go together, and I just wanted to share them with you. So what do I, a 21st century musician and conductor, do with my odd love of Bruckner and Bruckner's music? And I know it comes at least partly from my early years as a horn player and being in Germany. We horn players, he's very good to us, actually. So, and I couldn't imagine anyone not finding this music meaningful. And in fact, when I first started my job here at Maryland, the very first piece that I bought for the University of Maryland Symphony Orchestra was Bruckner Fifth Symphony. That was in 2001. We have not played it yet. So tonight is finally the culmination of not only a purchase, but an idea that's been in my brain for a long, long time. But something was holding me back, and I think it's along the lines of my second question, which is it important to share the love of a composer who's not necessarily as well known as many of the composers we play with the young American orchestra of today? That was my second question. And I kind of feel that as conductors, our job is to love no matter what it is we're conducting and appreciate everything we lead. But when it comes right down to it, some composers just lie closer to our hearts. And this is a man whose music does lie close to my heart. And so I just had to go with my gut and believe that programming that's led by love can't go that far wrong, even if the love isn't necessarily shared in advance by those that I'm working with before we begin. Brass players are fine. Brass players just love Bruckner automatically. They grow up loving it before they even know it. It's just that everybody else who needs a little convincing. So, third question is, if we're going to do this, how can we set up a context for this music's challenges to be met in a way that was gratifying both for us on stage and for you in the audience? How can we access what's great about this music? And I just need to admit here, the principal challenge of this music, in my estimation, is its length and the stamina it takes, both as a listener and a player, to get from beginning to end of this. It's a long journey. It requires vast strength and for those who are playing, and a kind of patience for those who are experiencing the music. There is something timeless and eternal in this guy's musical structures, and you just have to accept it on its own terms. But just like the long drive in a car, the better we know the route, the shorter it's going to seem to us and all of our fellow travelers. So what we've been doing in rehearsals is trying to grasp the shape and the arc of the piece to, in order to be able to give you a sense that we all know where you're going so that you can feel well led there. When I realized the symphony was going to be on the same program as the Ravel, and that we were going to have an incredible chorus up in the balcony, this triggered a memory for me. And that memory was very gratifying. One of my conducting teachers, who was basically as German as they come, used to say that before any American orchestras played Bruckner, is allowed to play Bruckner, they should have to sing Palestrina motets for 3 years. Which seemed a little severe as far as I was concerned. And I don't think he meant, I think he meant that we don't really understand this music here or something along those lines. But I took note that there was a connection between Palestrina and Bruckner in this guy's mind. Why Palestrina? This is a 16th century composer of purely sacred music, but he actually had a little rebirth of interest in the 19th century among romantic composers, not only Bruckner, but also Liszt and Brahms. And he writes, Palestrina's music is a music of calm belief, and a kind of contrapuntal ecstasy that seemed to connect to Bruckner's own Catholic faith and his own musical voice. They both seem to write for eternity. So, in order to help all of us understand and feel the sound world from which Bruckner's music sprang, I've asked for something a little strange tonight. I've asked the orchestra and the chorus to sing short excerpts from Palestrina, and we're going to weave it into and around the four movements of the symphony, okay? It may seem decidedly counterintuitive to actually be putting any more music in a symphony that already lasts 78 minutes, and for that I apologize. But we're betting on Palestrina to serve as a kind of palate cleanser, if you want to feel it that way, or a kind of blessing on Bruckner's music. And this will provide us with a half of a program which certainly has heavenly length, which they used to say about Schubert's music. So, for the orchestra, this is actually our Maryland debut as a chorus, and I need to admit that we're all a little nervous. But one of the other things that I need to know about Bruckner before we get going here. He's a cathedral builder in sound. Cathedrals take centuries to build. His symphonies don't take centuries, but they're long. He's a mountain climber. And when you're climbing mountains, even if you can see the distant peaks that you're about to conquer, it's really all about the journey, about getting there. Bruckner is deeply Catholic, and he accepted, lived by it, a worldview that includes a heaven and a hell and purgatory and a plane of life itself on which battles rage, but where nature and prayer also find their home. He was an amazing organist. He could improvise like nobody's business, and he loved hearing the reverberation of his music and the sound of the organ ringing through the breadth of big, open cathedral spaces. So you hear that in his music as well. Mahler described him as being half simpleton and half God. Great combination. The two special facts that I want to leave you with just before we begin is that he didn't start composing until the age of 40, so he's the complete opposite of a child prodigy. And the other thing that I was very moved to discover was that he never heard this symphony played by an orchestra. He wrote it and wrote it down and just moved on, which is incredible. So, on behalf of Bruckner, we'd like to dedicate tonight's performance to late bloomers anywhere, and also to anybody who might be working and toiling in obscurity to leave something of value to the world which may or may not be recognized then or in the future. So this has been a meaningful journey for us, and I'm so moved that you guys would come and share with us. Thank you very much.